Oh, okay. We'll give it a second. Let the food work its magic. Oh my gosh. Where is he?
It was one of the days where I got a bunch done before this happened, too. I'm glad I got up early. Not that I got up early, but, you know, early for me.
Yeah, I've got a fairly early morning. Not too early. I'm going to meet Malcolm at 10.
What for?
Matt and I shot the title sequence portion of it. Mm-hmm. He would like to get it sooner than later so he can start working.
Right, because he's leaving in a couple months.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay. We got the recorder on. It's
weeks now.
Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, it's Joshua. Say hi, Joshua.
Hi.
And Ian. And we're going to talk about from 2011, Hannah and her sisters. Nope, not Hannah and her sisters. This is just Hannah. Her sisters aren't in this one. Directed by Joe Wright, the guy that did Atonement. And this, I would call this an art house action movie. Does that sound about right? It's almost a new genre. No, not really, but I mean, to a degree.
That's a good way of putting it. There was a uniqueness to it I definitely like, and didn't know much about Joe Wright until I did some research today. This is very not his style. It's just like a...
You mean like a plot thematic-wise?
Yeah. He usually does films more like Atonement, from what right. I was reading from the synopses, and this one was kind of like its own piece, like he wanted to do something new.
Yeah.
And it worked. I mean, you want to talk about the feel of the film? I mean, it's...
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Kind of, yeah.
One thing... I mean, real quick premise. It's really it's a chase film. It sets itself up that there's this teenage girl, young teenage girl. Maybe what would you say 14 like ish? It's kind of hard to tell. At the beginning, she seems a little younger than she does by the end. I mean, part of that's character
the
arc.
Whole
but
thing. I don't want to give anything away, but the whole thing where she's in Spain with the guys. I got like a
right,
sweet
yeah.
16 film.
Yeah, she kind of almost all of a sudden aged her up, but mm-hmm. So she's out in the snow with her dad or whatever, and he's been training her on all these things. And
played by Eric Bana.
Yeah, played by Eric Bana. And so she speaks all kinds of languages and knows all kinds of facts, and you know, it's just kind of like he's basically. It seems like he's preparing her for something, mm-hmm. And you learn that I guess the whole idea is that at some point when she's ready to go into the world or something, she's going to activate some signals and people will come for her, and he knows and she knows that, and then she'll come to try to meet him.
I want to say it's fairly safe to talk about stuff that was in the trailer, right?
Yeah, the trailer sets up most of this
yeah,
sort of like...
It's clear that she's training to kill someone. And that's like something that they set up fairly early in the beginning of the story. And it's in the trailer, I mean.
Yeah.
Right? So watch that if you haven't seen it. And then it kind of goes from there, and you're never really quite clear. There's that...
It's a bit of a coming of age, yeah.
It's definitely a coming of age. They play that up to the nth degree because she's raised in the forest.
Right.
So everything is like this new experience.
And there's also that kind of like aspect. I mean, what's definitely kind of drawing inspiration a little bit, I'd say, from like the Bourne films in terms of like someone that's being chased and having to kind of navigate things. But it's like it's a young female girl, you know.
Imagine if James, imagine if Bourne
mm-hmm.
met the Brothers Grimm. That's kind of where they're trying to go with this. And some of the scenes, some of the action sequences were a little far out.
Right.
I don't know if I necessarily would have done them that way. They almost pulled me out of it once or twice, especially when she was the big chase of getting out early in the beginning.
Right. I liked a lot of that. I mean,
the music is right. What made it work. It's
the Chemical Brothers,
like, it sold a lot of that bizarre cinematography because I was almost on the verge of not liking it, but it worked.
Right.
I liked it.
It made it unique, yeah. Too, like you said. Yeah. I mean, it was a unique way to frame certain action pieces and shoot them in kind of a more clever than sort of way. Not just like a let's make it shaky cam and everything, but like let's have her walk through these things that are kind of an odd diagonal, like, or a series of like metal beams, and then like which angle are we watching her do this? And then the Chemical Brothers music is going crazy,
probably
and the lights are strobing.
Had the most 360 rotation cameras ever seen.
Right? Yeah. Did a bunch of that
spin,
stuff. That stuff always
kill.
Takes. Well, can really
yeah.
always take you out. I mean, I've got this problem now. I mean, I don't know where I'm pretty much always half out of a movie when I'm watching it all the time.
And you send it to that level.
Yeah, well, I have. And you know what? you know, when you talk about like, oh man, I really love movies, I think I'd like to make them, and it's like, do you want to make it your work? It's like, I've pretty much already, I'm at that level where I'm half out of them now anyway.
Ah, but if you love what you do, you never work a day of your life.
Right, well, yeah, exactly, but you know what I mean? It's that weird kind of like, because I'm half out of them. So I guess that's a good thing and a bad thing, because I can never really be taken out because I'm never fully really in. But
see, I reached that point too in my earlier 20s, and I learned how to shut that off.
Sometimes, yeah.
The most valuable thing for me, because sometimes you just want to enjoy a movie.
No, I think it's easier to shut off when you've already made your decision about a movie, like on a second or third viewing, in a weird way, because you're no longer trying to understand what they're doing for making this. And part of it's the podcast. Like, I'm always thinking, like, oh, I watch this with like a critical eye and pay attention to what I like and don't like.
That extra little nuance of it is what makes you, because if you do a podcast right after, you kind of have to pay attention to everything.
Right, yeah.
So,
the Chase thing worked, the Chemical Brothers music worked, they were on locations and they were varied, they were in Morocco, they were in Spain.
See, that's what I wasn't sure, were they actually...
You know, whether they were or whether they won't, they weren't on a green screen soundstage half the time, they actually went places.
I mean, they shot, they were real sets.
Yeah, and
I was wondering if they
real
actually...
Real outside location shooting, yeah. I mean, I think they were for some of them, I believe that they probably were.
I don't know, the budget was $30 million.
Yeah, and there wasn't, it wasn't super high on crazy visual effects. It wasn't like they had, like, you know, CGI Zeppelins in the background or anything. Mm-hmm. There was maybe a little bit of, I mean, the fighting was kind of cool, but in some places the fighting was a little weak, I think. It was like they at least tried to show hand-to-hand combat, but it didn't always read well, you know what I mean?
Some of it was a little fake. I mean, like, once or twice, it's almost like the camera was just off a little bit,
right.
And you could see that it didn't quite make contact on some of the punches.
Yes, I think when Banna's fighting all those guys in that underground tube.
See, I noticed that when Hannah was fighting those three guys after she ran out of the van, and they were, like, next to these huge crates.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed it then. It was, like, punches were just bigger.
Yeah, that was a definite, like...
Uh-huh.
That was a definite sort of Bourne thing where they're kind of shaky camming it a little and giving you pieces of what's going on.
But they didn't fall into the trap of action films that came right after Bourne and tried to mimic it.
Yeah.
They used a little bit, but they kind of did their own thing too.
They definitely did. And they staged some of the set pieces. Almost all are so cool. Like, you talk about, initially it's the snow, and there's awesome stuff happens in the snow. And then it's this escape from this cavernous holding area, CIA thing. The metallics and the cement and a little bit of light. And then, of course, you get the desert that's just sort of a walking around. It's quieter. And then you talk about the crates and the whole walking through there. And the way that's staged, and then the way the interrogations after the fact are staged, it's all really just clever and creative and fun.
Yeah, it really felt like a lot, if not every shot, was clearly thought out, storyboarded, planned, choreographed. Like, they knew what they were doing. It wasn't just like, oh, let's shoot that, let's shoot this. That could be kind of cool. It's like, no, this felt like it was...
I do kind of want to say, just being a little critical of it, did it feel to you like maybe it was kind of running out of steam towards about like three quarters of the way? Like, where one action sequence I remember was literally just like as simple as, I mean, they'd done all these fun, cool ones, but then like towards the end, like, it's just Eric Bana just runs up to a car and punches somebody, and then is running and the car is driving, and you're just like, there's not a lot to this.
I'll tell you where it started running out of steam for me before it started picking up again, and it kind of pulled me out. It was dragging. Is when she went to that magician's house,
right?
And all of a sudden,
Grim,
like, he weren't really sure what the relationship was with the father. It's obvious that he knew the parents, and he maybe was involved in the CIA. Maybe he wasn't.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who cares? I mean, but
it was definitely sort of like a, okay, we're ready to get this going and finish.
It slowed it all down. Because up to then, it was pretty cool paced. Yeah.
And I mean, again, talking about those cool settings, all of that stuff, she was walking through this old abandoned amusement park, was just awesome. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, like fake dinosaurs and lions and tigers and all kinds of stuff.
And then a great shot where Kate Blanchett walks out.
Comes out of the mouth.
Yeah. The wolf, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, some of that stuff can seem very, like, on the nose if you're...
Very symbolic.
If you really are familiar with the fairy tale stuff and is the imagery and some the symbology.
Who's afraid of the big bad?
Right. And it's like, okay, fine. In terms of, like, plot things and character things, for the most part, I liked all of it. It is kind of... If you really try to be like, okay, what's going on? What's the point? There are some points where you're sort of like, okay, like... I feel like I would have wanted a little more, maybe not so much explanation, but just a little more, a little more to that.
A little more meat to the bone?
Meat to the bone, yeah.
Because like we talked about yesterday, it was a fairly simplistic story. Right. There's not a lot going on. I mean, spoiler alert, I'm not going to say much because there's not much to say. She's raised by her father. She has to make this choice to get taken back to a military facility to kill this woman. And then she's running from them after she thinks she killed the woman that she was after, but it turns out she wasn't. So the woman she was supposed to kill is chasing her for the whole film. And that's pretty much it.
Right.
They built an entire movie around that. And, you know, they finally meet at the end, and what happens, happens.
And right. And, I mean, that's a huge... I mean, you could... If you want to get nitpicky, and I'm going to get nitpicky about a few things, because it's a good enough movie to be nitpicky. Mm-hmm. So it's not just all praise, and someone hears us talk about it, and then they go and they see it, and like, you know what? This was wrong. It's like, one... If that was really her mission that she'd been trained for all her life was to kill this, you know, Cate Blanchett's character, you'd think that Banner would have at least had a photograph of her to be like, this is what she is.
Sure.
Like, I was sitting there the whole time at that scene when the imposter was there being like, she's going to know because she's so well trained. They've established she's so well trained about things that she's going to pick up something about how this person's lying. Like, he must have trained her how to know when people are lying, you know? And that wasn't the case. That didn't pan out so that way the whole plot could unfold. So that's
I guess just to play devil's advocate, I mean, in that one scene where he's escaping with the mom alive and the Cate kind of comes out, it almost seems like they went on the lam right after that and he never probably went back to get items or anything. Like, what they had and they may do.
Right.
So I mean, they had a photo of her.
They ended up having enough stuff for him to teach her about, like, all
of them. They had a couple items, but it looked like everything else was, like, made...
Right.
In the forest.
Right. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I imagine he was able to go back really, you know, at some points in time and get items he may have needed to build a cabin or... Yeah. So that's a little thin... the whole premise that gets things going of him letting her go as opposed to them just staying there is at least sort of explained. You know, like, kids have to grow up, you know? At some point, she's done. She has to grow up. He has to let her out of the nest. It's literally, he lets her out of... She's ready to be out of the nest, and she does. In that sense, it was good. I thought the Hannah girl's performance was good.
I thought all the kids
she's kind of an up-and-coming, probably.
I was really impressed with the child acting in this piece.
I mean, and I wouldn't call it child... I mean, like I said, she's probably 14 or something like that. I mean, she's not like a little kid. She's old enough to, like... It's not on the level of, like, Tree of Life, where those are, like, little kids. Those are, like, 10-year-olds
versus... We're talking about, like, pre-teen to teenagers here.
Right, so. Yeah, tweener type age, where I think you start to understand...
Non-adults.
Non-adults.
It was great non-adult acting. Yeah, Let's call it that, then.
You know, it was a lot of good things, but anything else where it, I don't know, it was only 111 minutes, so it wasn't even 2 hours, and like we said, it was a little slow in a few spots, especially towards the end when she's meeting with that, but that moved pretty quick. I think I was just left being more like, I know at this point where this is going to happen. They could have intercut. What I was thinking about that, what would have been better is if they'd intercut between that scene and, like, Banna trying to arrive and Blanchett starting to arrive, because you knew all three of these people were going to coalesce about the same time there. But instead, they just stick with Hannah and they hold on her, meeting this guy, walking through this space and all of this. And I think it gets a little slow. And it would have been a better action. It would have been more energized if they had done intercutting between, like, Banna running to get there and Blanchett running to get there, you know? It's kind of a cheap move, but I don't know. That would have been a way to do that.
Great cinematography.
Yeah, no, totally great cinematography. Yeah. I think, I don't know if it was, was it like a gypsy dance at one point when they go on their little kind of date, her and her friend that she meets?
Oh, this is when they went to Spain.
It was something like that, some kind of Spanish dance or something. I feel like that just, like, was kind of like about three times longer than it needed to be. It really just focused on the dance, and you're just sort of watching these people dance for a while, and it's like, you know what?
I got good reactions from her. I mean, that was a theme. It's like this girl, there's a lot of things in life that she knew of but never experienced, so they took time to
but that
show
one
her
thing,
love of music,
yeah.
Love of dance. I mean, just the elements that she needed to you know, have that joy
to start becoming a person.
And then they made a point of that. They wrapped it up with the magician. He was like, oh, you haven't been exposed to these things? Your father, what has he done to you?
Yeah, right. But, I mean, some of that was good. What was I going to say? I had some kind of last kind of conclusive kind of statement on the whole thing. One thing that I really want to give it praise for is something that I've always been obsessed with in terms of trying to do in a movie is the capturing the like sort of perceptive feeling and sensibility, and they kind of did this in this, of when you're a passenger in a car or a van or a truck on like a road trip mm-hmm. with the window down, just kind of looking in the rearview mirror, looking out the window, just kind of like air, wind blowing through your face, kind of just, it's a weird kind of like lively moment, but it's very slow and pensive kind of and subtle. And they get that in that film. There's that scene where she's in the passenger side of the van while the mom of the people that she's kind of shacked up with or whatever, that she's sort of stowed away with, I guess, are driving somewhere, and she's just kind of hanging out. She's got her legs up on the thing, you know, just kind of chilling out. And she's nervous about the people that are following her too, but it really kind of just captures a moment of like her being on a trip, on a journey of discovery, if you will. And that's where it's a little art house, but like it's, like I said, it looks good and it's got enough action and stuff happening in it that it's just unique. I would say that from seeing the trailer, the first trailer I saw kind of turned me off because it had like a few of those trailery moments and it just looked like, okay, I get this. It's like the girl is trained and she's that's the gimmick, and then Kate Blanchett's chasing after her and it's like whatever, it's a spy thing. But it is that, but it's just executed very well, and there's some unique decisions that are made. And I mean, there's, you know, it's worth seeing. It's worth the less than 2 hours or the 2 hours it will take out of your life to see it.
Very interesting. I mean, slightly unorthodox,
right?
Original, refreshing. Yeah. I mean, it was like even with like just basic storytelling. I mean, for those of you who know anything about screenplay writing, when you have a lead, a protagonist, it's usually their want that carries them through the film. And then when they get what they want, the movie ends, and it literally ended right when she got what she wanted, like on that frame. But she thought she had that in the beginning of the film. So a lot of the movie, she didn't even realize that she had to go back to her original primary objective. It was just her kind of experiencing life, getting back to her dad, like mission accomplished.
Which
is very interesting. And then you have the other Kate Blanchett character, you know, doing what she's going to do to make her presence known. And that other sub-villain, like that guy.
Yeah.
I really liked him. I mean, he looked very non-threatening, and yet he was terrifying.
Right. Yeah, no, he was good because you introduce him as this sort of, like, offbeat club owner that's been done some nasty shit in the past. And then you think, well, is he going to, like, suit up and go just be, like, a quiet whatever? And you're like, no, he's just going to have
his
buddies, and then he's going to pop in the car and go track this lady down and be kind of cruel psychopath types. And that was what they were.
The sadist.
Yeah. One more thing I'm a little critical about. I don't know. I feel like they've done this a few times or something. But the decision to give Blanchett's character like sort of a southern drawl, like that's kind of there sometime and kind of not there other times. Like it didn't really work for me. Like it seemed unnecessary to like
whatever. I mean, it's like it's. I think at that point it's just like actors on Eric Bana and Blanchett's level. They probably just want something fun to do. It's like, well, he gets a German accent. I want to do something. And,
I guess maybe it didn't do much for me. And you know what? I feel like there was some real subtext to the Blanchett like plot line that didn't have a payoff in terms of like I really was the whole time, were you thinking the whole time that it was very likely, and maybe they planted this and it's just like instead of just on the head that, I mean, and this is could be considered a spoiler alert, but this is my hypothesis, so it's not really anything, that Hannah was actually cultivated possibly from Blanchett.
I really like thought that was going to be the twist.
Right. But there was no real twist.
No, I thought she was going to be the mother.
Or even more twisted, that the mother was the mother and that they just used two ova to make her or something. And Blanchett was like that pseudo-father or something. Yeah, I see you make the creepy face, but that's a twist, isn't it?
Yeah. Nothing would allude to or deny that
abnormal.
Fact.
Abnormal. The genes are
abnormal.
Obviously
it was abnormal. I mean, I don't want to... I guess we could talk about that. I mean, she was an enhanced super baby. They were trying to make a super soldier.
Yeah.
So she had heightened abilities.
It gets comic booky.
A 14-year-old girl taking on grown men. It wasn't just because she was a talented fighter, which I'm not saying that a grown woman could be. But, I mean, when you have, like, a teenage girl, you know...
They hinted things in her cells, and they even have, like, the lab techs running her blood. Now, check it again.
Yeah.
And you never really get a good sense of other than just... oh, well, you know, they did stuff.
Well, yeah, that was it. I mean,
and it became a real hand wave comic book superhero thing.
Yeah, they gave me superpowers.
When Eric Bana explains, like, they were able to, you know, the genes, they were able to take out pity and things like that. And it's like, didn't seem like that really worked very well, because the girl seemed to kind of integrate with society pretty easily. Like, she wasn't a cult.
There are also those moments where, like, when the dude, when she goes back, he was hung upside down in arrows and whatnot, and she just kind of looked at him, and then when the threat came, she said, there was no pity there.
There was the time when the guy tried to kiss her, and she kind of flipped him over.
So, I mean, like, she had a love of life, but she didn't pity those moments that we would.
I guess. Maybe
the fear thing doesn't hold up for me now, because she did look afraid when, like, all the electronics were going off.
Right.
Remember in that room? Like, that was fear, and if they removed fear, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah. So, I don't know. In that sense, I could see someone, like, when it ended, it did the cool RoboCop thing, where it just ended on the title.
Right, when she got what she wanted, yeah.
And there's something cool about that, but at the same time, I still felt kind of, like, dissatisfied with the fact, like, well, what was really going on here with the relationship between Blanchett and this? I mean, if it was just a project she was trying to finish up, then that's kind of bland, you know?
That was it. It was a very simplistic story.
I mean, yeah, the chase...
I think you're trying to overcomplicate it.
Well, I think that they planted seeds that justify that, though. Don't you? The way Blanchett was so sort of obsessive about this one girl and said, like, she made a point of saying her biological mother and things like that.
Well, like, yeah, because it was like her baby project. I got that feeling. It was like this creation that she wanted to have in her past.
And she wanted to make sure it was all cleaned up.
What I got is that she was trying to do something that was unethical.
Right.
And that's why the project got pulled, because they had that one ambiguous scene where she was burning the file. So I wanted to say, she probably did something she couldn't do. They made it clear that she was comfortable doing things that she wasn't supposed to when she hired that club owner.
Right, yeah.
So it was probably something very unethical, something that she wanted to do, her baby project, and they said, are you fucking crazy? So she was trying to keep it hush-hush. She was eliminating the super babies. One got away. That's her ass if that gets out. If, you know, that's what she kept saying. Keep Interpol. Keep everyone else out.
Right.
I got to do this.
I gotta,
because she wanted to cover her tracks. That's what I got.
No, I get that's the Bourne thing too, you know.
Yeah, I didn't catch anything else. I mean, like, I think everything you're saying,
it could have been there. I think it would have.
There's just nothing that set it up really.
It would have made it a little better, or who knows? It would have just bogged things down a little bit. For the most part, yeah, it was a good one. It was watchable. It was good. I guess the only other thing I still have a problem with is there's some degree of ambiguity with the ending in terms of, like, where Hannah is at. Hannah's not walking away from the situation in perfect health.
No.
They kind of glossed over that at the very end, you know?
No, but they set up enough with the whole her being a super soldier that I just assumed she'd be able to recover.
I guess. Okay, you know, at this point, yeah, we're getting kind of just nitpicky and into the miasma of it all. I think I'd give it I had a good time with it. I could watch it again in another 4 or 5 years, probably, maybe, and enjoy it. I mean,
in half a decade, you know, come back to you.
Well, that's what I would be with most movies. I mean, you know, or between 2 to 5 years, if you'll rewatch it again and think you'd enjoy it, then
that's why I don't watch nearly as many movies as you do, because I'll like a movie and watch it again.
Well, I mean, sometimes, yeah. I can't do that because I burn out quickly. I get bored with it.
Yeah.
And I want to just enjoy it. I kind of want that new experience every time.
I think I'm just crazy. Like, I just watched Jackie Brown twice in a row.
Did you watch it with the commentary once or something? That doesn't count.
I think I watched it, and then I watched the behind-the-scenes documentary, and I was like, oh, I didn't even notice that. That's really cool. I want to see that. And I watched it again.
The whole movie again? Okay, well, yeah. You're just a student of it.
It was like in the span of 24 hours. It wasn't like back-to-back, but
that's pretty back-to-back to watch. I mean, that's...
It was the next movie
six,
I saw.
That's six hours out of the 24 hours just on Jackie Brown-related materials. I have that problem with special features, because if I've just watched a movie, sometimes I can watch the special features, but I sometimes like a break from it. But then if I go too long, then it's like I can't enjoy the movie.
See, what I can understand is, how come you've only seen The Dark Knight since it came out? Did you see it again? See, that's a long... That movie, I can't even fathom not being able to watch that movie for as many years as you've abstained.
I understand
your reasoning.
It wasn't even like that for me. It was just like, you know what? When that one was coming out, I rewatched Batman Begins for the second time. it was the second time I'd ever watched that, and I watched the Dark Knight anime stuff, and then I watched that movie. And so now I'm going to do them all again, I mean, sooner rather than later.
Sure.
You'll
probably do them again right before the movies come out, the new one?
No, because I'm not going to have the nifty setup down in L.A. where we're living, so I'll just do them now, and then in a few months.
I see why you're doing it now.
Right.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, ow. I poked myself. Yeah, I get a little overly precious about some of the stuff I really like, but I'm learning to kind of curb that. At the same time, that's like my prerogative. It's like if I really like stuff, then I'll enjoy it on my own terms.
I get it. I couldn't do it.
So I mean, get back to Hannah and give it some kind of rating.
Sure.
It's better than a 3.5 and maybe not quite a 4. I mean, Zach and I just reviewed Miller's Crossing, and Miller's Crossing is like a really good movie, and I gave it like a 4.5-ish, like a 4.25. I'll give Hannah like a 3.75. It's, yeah, it was good. What'd you give it?
Yeah, it was very simplistic. There were some things that were a jarring, but they definitely did it for effect.
Right, yeah.
It was very well thought out, very well executed. You could tell that these were masters of their craft.
Right.
I was thoroughly entertained throughout the entire movie. Even when there were just, like, exposition scenes in the beginning where he's, like, reading facts to her.
Because it was a cool setting.
It was
interesting.
It worked for me. It was like, I was thoroughly entertained through the entire movie. There wasn't really... Right. I mean, we're nitpicking here,
yeah,
and I could continue to nitpick,
right,
but there wasn't really anything where I was like, oh, this movie's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
That never happened. I was actually happy.
You even... I mean, this is one, like, there's a whole story behind this movie. It, like, took us 2 nights to watch it because the first night we had to update my PS3 and it didn't work out, and then the next night it was late and you're working on a production and everything, and it's like... It's like, okay, let's just watch this. And you were him and Han. You're like, I don't know if I want to watch it. And I'm like, I think I've heard the right people seem to like this movie.
I talked to some guys in LA and they didn't like it. They said it wasn't worth the time. And I just said, well, maybe that's what it is. But
yeah,
it got good reviews. I mean, it wasn't the hottest on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it got like a 72%. Still fresh.
That's probably what you kind of want, to be honest. I think at a certain point, if it gets too good, then it's either so generic that it's like, oh yeah, of course they did that right. Or it's, I don't know what. I mean... Occasionally there are those movies that are just that good and everyone can't deny it, but yeah.
Shawshank.
Yeah, or something like that. Is that the highest one ever on
that? That's still IMDb's number one movie, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so then we started it late. Like, we started it at like 11 o'clock, and you had a full day of stuff.
And I was tired.
And you were tired.
And I told you. I said, that's the test. If I fall asleep in a movie, it probably wouldn't be that good.
And
I stayed awake. I sat back up. I was reclining, and I was falling asleep, and I was like, no.
You didn't stay awake. I told you, whether it's a good movie or not, if you kick back those chairs and you're stationary,
but that's a good sign. The fact that I made myself sit up to stay awake.
Yeah.
Because lately I've just been falling asleep. If a movie is going to make me fall asleep, I've got other things I got to do in my life.
Right.
It probably wasn't worth it anyway.
Well, there's that, but then there's also, I mean, I look at it like I'll fall asleep. If I'm tired, I will fall asleep.
Well, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, even now, it's like, put me in a dark theater. Like, I just saw one of the worst movies that's probably going to come out this year. Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Oh no, when why did you do that?
Super energized. Malcolm wanted to see a horror film, so he convinced all of us to go.
Just for the sake of it.
Just for the sake of seeing a horror film. Worst possible
movie. You guys didn't go see Drive. You couldn't go see a movie that... You didn't use your money to go see a movie that's very likely to be good.
I would love to see Drive. Is it playing?
Yeah, it started today.
Well, we didn't see it today. We saw it before today.
Oh, you saw Don't Afraid of the Dark.
This was like a week ago. We saw the trailer for Drive, and I think that's going to have a very similar style to Hannah, ironically enough, when you're talking about action.
I don't know
films.
The director. I don't know the director either,
but the first half of that trailer, I thought that trailer was brilliant. The first half started like a generic action film, and then halfway in became like a very artistic, like, ooh, this
I've only seen one that just looks like action at this point, but I've seen other hints of things.
It was a long trailer.
I've only seen like one
maybe 2.5 to 3 minutes.
Yeah, like, it looks like Albert Brooks plays like the heavy bad guy.
It looks fairly awesome, and I think that this is kind of the new wave of cinema. We can take these old genres that used to be generic, and let's make them artistic.
Well, maybe it's like a cheat for these. It's like, because...
Well, we have to keep reinventing
You've had the comic book movies that have been bringing in A-level people, like A-level directors, well, kind of A-level directors and A-level actors in comic book movies. And now I think maybe you're starting to get that next rung of, like, directors that are like, you know what? I can make money if I make a comic movie, but I don't want to make a fucking comic movie. Maybe I can just make a good action movie.
That's artistic.
And that will be... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that... I would love if that were the case.
I could be way off the mark on this.
Yeah, who knows? It could be a piece of shit.
What I was saying. It could be, but I'm going to see it anyway.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that we were that close to it. I'm probably going to...
No, it came out. It came out today. I was going to see it today, but
I'll
then...
I'll probably didn't work out and see it tomorrow if I have the time.
I'm going to try to see it probably next week at some point.
But anyway, again, I could be way off the mark on this, but like I was saying it yesterday, I think this might be the new wave of cinema.
Yeah.
Like taking these type of films and really just taking risks with them artistically.
Well, like the new remakes.
We know it sells.
Yeah.
These new remakes, they sell, but they're not new. I mean, like, I really do like what he did. I mean, like, kind of with Scott Pilgrim, that being, like, one of the first, and it fell. It was a failure.
But they lost money on it. Ambitious, yeah.
This one made more than double their money back.
Okay.
It was a $30 million budget, and they made, like, $63 million back. So
unfortunately, you have to break the bank for all the studios and everyone to be like, that's the thing to do.
You got
to
break the bank for them
to
want to do it again. But it's not a failure if you
right.
make
no,
more than
no,
double
we know
money.
That.
So,
but execution is the problem these days. It's like,
well,
it's like I read an article that somebody wrote about Inception, where it's like, okay, think of all the pieces that are in play from like a studio standpoint that make this movie sound like greenlight the shit out of it, right? It's like, well, let's get up some big stars. Let's do a heist picture that works. Let's do some action set pieces and all these things that are like laid out. They're like, oh, I understand this. Audiences like this, this, and this.
Yep.
They love the ocean movies. People like Leonardo DiCaprio. Girls love Leonardo DiCaprio, you know?
Sure. And that's
people
sells.
Love Christopher Nolan. And then there you go. But they're like, but you know what? It's not a remake. It's not a marketable property. It isn't based on a comic book or anything else that's ever sold. So we're scared. So we'll let you make it because you did The Dark Knight and we got to get you to make this third one. But
well, yeah, that was the thing. It was like, okay, you make The Dark Knight Rises and we'll let you make your
film. And then
it
makes $1 zillion.
Yeah.
And people are like, and then the studio's just like, well, you know, that was a fluke. As opposed to, no,
well,
if you have the pieces
no
and
one's
you
gonna
execute
make a few more
well,
flukes in his grab.
Right, I would hope so. But it's just the nervousness of on the part of the business people about execution. It's like, okay, you've got all the pieces, but then make it work.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
Just because I think really
they made it work.
The
Indiana.
Forefronting.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of new wave cinema in America, I think this might be it. I think, you know, it's very fast paced. You know, everyone's ADD. It's an ADD
yeah.
generation. We want that stimulus, but we also want the art side to it too.
Right.
Thoroughly enjoyed it the whole way through. Would highly recommend it. I'll probably even buy it. Just based on my own personal enjoyment, I'm giving this one a 5.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'd get it for, like, if I can find it in 2 or 3 years, if I find it on a Blu-ray for, like, under 10 or
I'd
10 or something.
I'd watch it again just for the music. Like,
the music was good, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe check out the score on, like,
that's a soundtrack.
Spotify
that's
or
a soundtrack
iTunes
to,
or something.
To check out for sure. iTunes, that one, and sample it. It's pretty good.
And that'll be interesting. We'll see. Like there was the Daft Punk for Tron, and then there was Chemical Brothers. I mean, there have been electronic groups making soundtracks for a while, but maybe that's going to be a new thing that's part of this whole new...
Maybe.
And Beck did the soundtrack for Scott Pilgrim. So,
yes.
So
I like it.